If the question of citizenship is included on the 2020 census, the Census Bureau itself estimates that some 6.5 million people would not be counted. Opponents of the citizenship question say that including such a question unconstitutionally hampers the constitutional mandate to count all residents of the U.S. every 10 years. The U.S. Supreme Court's conservative majority during yesterday's oral arguments on the issue, however, appeared to side with Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, who oversees the census, on including the question. A decision is expected by early June. Coming up, the citizenship question and the U.S. Census. That's after the news on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News and online at WOSU.org.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. The death toll in Sri Lanka is now at 359 people from Sunday's coordinated bombings. More of the wounded have died of their injuries. NPR's Lauren Frayer has more on the investigation into the suicide attacks claimed by ISIS.
Sri Lanka's Deputy Defense Minister, Ruwan Vijayawardena, says at least one of the bombers was highly educated and well-traveled.
We believe that one of the suicide bombers studied in the UK and then maybe later on did his postgraduate in Australia before coming back to settle in Sri Lanka.
He also says another of the bombers was a woman. In Parliament, Sri Lankan lawmakers are accusing intelligence officials of failing to act on specific warnings about a domestic Islamist group believed to be responsible, possibly with outside help. ISIS has claimed responsibility. Meanwhile, the U.S. ambassador to Sri Lanka says the terror threat there is still ongoing. Lauren Frayer, NPR News, Mumbai.
President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump will address efforts to fight the opioid crisis. Today, they'll speak in Atlanta to a conference of medical professionals, public health, and elected officials. From member station WABE, Johnny Kaufman has more.
The Prescription Drug Abuse and Heroin Summit began in 2012 as a way to discuss effective ways to prevent and treat opioid abuse. President Trump first called the opioid crisis a public health emergency in 2017. Since then, Congress has allocated billions of dollars to fight it. Those efforts have focused on reducing the number of opioid prescriptions written by doctors, disrupting the international illicit drug trade, and getting people into addiction treatment. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says drug overdose deaths continue to rise in the U.S. In 2017, the latest year for which federal data are available, some 70,000 people died of overdoses, and two-thirds involved in opioid. For NPR News, I'm Johnny Kaufman in Atlanta.
Russia has welcomed North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. He arrived in the eastern Russian city of Vladivostok today, ahead of tomorrow's summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin. This will be Kim's first such meeting with Putin. NPR's Anthony Kuhn says the two leaders are expected to focus on North Korea's nuclear program.
Kim arrived by train in Vladivostok. He's expected to meet with Putin Thursday and tour the city before returning home Friday. Putin can't offer Kim much economically with international sanctions in place. Analysts see the visit as a largely symbolic effort to line up diplomatic support as an alternative to relations with the U.S. and China.
NPR's Anthony Kuhn. Kim's trip to Russia follows his summit with President Trump in Vietnam 2 months ago. That meeting ended without a nuclear agreement. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrials are down 26 points at 26,624. The NASDAQ is down 10 at 8,110. You're listening to NPR News. NPR has learned that former Vice President Joe Biden will announce on Thursday he's running for the Democratic presidential nomination in 2020. He's been hinting at a run for some time. He's well regarded by some Democrats, but Biden has also run twice before for president and lost. Several women have also come forward recently to say Biden made them extremely uncomfortable with improper touching. Turkey's president is continuing his rejection of the term genocide to describe the mass killings of Armenians by Ottoman Turks. NPR's Peter Kenyon reports today is the 104th anniversary of the mass killings.
Historians estimate as many as 1.5 million Armenians were killed during World War I. Many consider it the first genocide of the 20th century. Turkey has never accepted that description, and President Recep Tayyip Erdogan continued that defiance on social media, tweeting that the Ottoman actions, which he describes as relocations, were, quote, the most reasonable action that could be taken in such a period. On April 24, 1915, some 250 Armenian intellectuals, journalists, clergymen, and professionals were arrested in Constantinople. They were deported, and the mass killings followed. Peter Kenyon, NPR News, Istanbul.
Scientists with NASA say they've captured the sound of an earthquake on the planet Mars. It's called a Marsquake, and its sound is much fainter than an earthquake. That's because they're caused by the planet's cooling. On Earth, quakes are caused by giant tectonic plates that rub together. Researchers hope they'll learn more about how Mars was formed and what its interior is like. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Staples, with print and marketing solutions for business, including color copies, booklets, and signage. More at Staples stores or staples.com. Staples. And the listeners who support this NPR station.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Supreme Court heard oral arguments yesterday on the addition of a citizenship question to the 2020 census. The court appears split along ideological lines, with the conservative majority approving of the question. NPR national correspondent Hansi Lo Wang has been covering the issue. He joins us by phone. Welcome back.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for having me again.
Hansi, who were the players yesterday? Who's for and who's against?
Well, this question was added by the Trump administration, and they were represented by U.S. Solicitor General Noah Francisco, who was arguing before the court on behalf of the administration. You also had attorneys arguing on behalf of plaintiffs, mainly the two groups of plaintiffs in the two lead lawsuits in New York. There are a total of seven lawsuits over the citizenship question, but really the Supreme Court was focusing specifically on the New York lawsuits, which were led by New York State, as well as a bunch of other cities and states, and you had the New York State Attorney General's office represented. Also from the ACLU, Attorney Dale Ho, he was representing a group of plaintiffs, different immigrant rights groups. Also interesting to have a representative from the from the U.S. House of Representatives, which was arguing on behalf of the plaintiffs against the citizenship question.
The judges appeared split, or justices appeared split along ideological lines. What was the evidence for that?
I think if you were to listen to the comments, the questions, obviously the court has not officially ruled yet. We're expecting a ruling likely by June. But if you were to listen to the comments and the questions, it appeared that the liberal side of the bench certainly was very critical of the question in terms of their comments to the lawyers, specifically to the Trump administration's attorney. And also, if you look on the conservative side of the bench, those justices, they were asking questions that seemed to come from the perspective that citizenship question could help enforce the Voting Rights Act is something. And also they brought up how this was there's a long history of the census using asking about citizenship.
There's a long history, but they haven't done it in a while, right?
Right. It's a complicated history. The last time a question about citizenship has been among the questions for every household was back in 1950. And since then, beginning in 1970, a sample of households, different small groups, different sizes over the years, have received questionnaires with a citizenship question. And so for 2020, what this Trump administration wants to do at the citizenship question, it would go to every household. And so it would be a big difference to currently how the government collects citizenship information from just a sample of households with what's now known as the American Community Survey.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. The question of citizenship is included currently on the 2020 census. The Census Bureau itself estimates that some 6.5 million people would not be counted if this question is included. The U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments yesterday on the issue. Right now we're talking about that with Hansi Lo Wang. He is an NPR national correspondent who's been covering the issue. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross oversees the Census Bureau. What kind of authority does that give him to add or subtract census questions? Does he have pretty much free rein?
He has a lot of authority delegated from Congress. And before we get into that, I just want to be very clear that currently, technically speaking, the question is blocked from appearing on the 2020 census based on district court rulings from New York, California, and Maryland. So technically, it's currently blocked.
Gotcha.
But Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross oversees the Census Bureau because the Census Bureau is under the Commerce Department. A lot of people are surprised to hear about that. And he is delegated a lot of oversight over major decisions about the census from Congress. The plaintiffs are arguing, however, that that discretion, that authority is not unlimited, and that three federal judges in New York and California, as well as Maryland, have found that he has violated a host of procedures that are set in order how new questions should be added to the 2020 census, to any census. Among them, the judges have found that Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross did not notify Congress that he was adding a new planned question topic to the 2020 census. That citizenship was not included in a report of the 2020 census question topics originally. Also, that this question was not fully tested. This question, the citizenship question, has not been on a 2020 census form that has gone out in a field test. And that's very critical because questions that are on the census are extensively tested. There is a very deliberative process that the Census Bureau follows, because the census, any survey instrument, is a very delicate tool that even just a tweaking of a word, the ordering of the questions, could affect how people respond to a survey, including the census, and could affect, therefore, the quality of the data.
So what's their explanation for not following the regular protocol?
The Trump administration is arguing, and you could hear this during the oral arguments, that essentially, Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross did his best in terms of hearing all sides of whether there should be or not a question, and that he had a policy goal in mind, and that's not unusual. He wanted a citizenship question, and the question here is, that he has this discretion. They are arguing that he has this discretion.
Even the Census Bureau says, as I mentioned earlier, that it could cost participation in the realm of $6.5 million. How does that compare and contrast with other questions that cost participation? I mean, is that a big chunk of people?
It's a very concerning number of people, because the Constitution requires a count of every person living in the country. And so even a small, if it may sound small, the point is to count every person once and where they live. And so 6.5 million is currently the Census Bureau's estimate of who would be discouraged from self-responding to a 2020 census. That number may be higher. We'll see, based on there's going to be a census question, citizenship question test beginning in June with about 500,000 households. And we'll see exactly how people respond. And I think it's important to point out here that the Census Bureau does not have any other real indication of any other question having such a substantial likelihood of discouraging people from responding. This is a particularly sensitive question, a particularly sensitive topic in a political climate of increased immigration enforcement and growing anti-immigrant rhetoric.
And then explain how they say it would help enforce the Voting Rights Act to know how many non-citizens there are in the United States.
The Trump administration has said that it wants this to have more detailed data to better enforce Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which has provisions to prevent the discrimination of racial and language minorities. However, the Census Bureau's recommendation, its own experts, has said that if you want more detailed citizenship data, more detailed than what we currently have through the American Community Survey, then adding a citizenship question is not the way to do it. If you really want to know how many citizens there are living in this country, adding a citizenship question is not the way to answer that question. And the Census Bureau is recommending instead to compile existing government records from different federal agencies, including Department of Homeland Security, Social Security Administration, the State Department, compiling that together. And they're saying those existing government records are going to be more accurate and less expensive than adding a citizenship question. And here we have a situation where the Commerce Secretary, Wilbur Ross, he has approved not only adding a citizenship question, but also compiling those records. But the concern here is, from a lot of folks who are critics of this question, is that the Trump administration wants to add this question, and that would harm likely the accuracy of the information collected.
Would any particular groups or regions be more harmed than others in that case?
The Census Bureau has found that this would be particularly, this citizenship question will be particularly sensitive amongst communities with Latinos, with non-citizens. And really, I think it's important to remember that the census information is collected by household. And so within a household, there could be folks who are non-citizens and folks who are citizens. And Census Bureau research, focus groups they've conducted, indicate that there are households where just having a presence of one non-citizen could jeopardize the entire household not being counted. And so this could impact the count of not just non-citizens, but also citizens.
During litigation, emails between Wilbur Ross, former White House chief strategist Steve Bannon, and former Kansas Secretary of State Kris Kobach were provided as evidence. What did those emails show about the decision-making process?
It showed that Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, his description of where this question originated to Congress. He testified before Congress that this citizenship question request was initiated by the Justice Department and that the Commerce Department was solely responding to a Justice Department request for a citizenship question. But after looking through the emails, memos, and other documents released as part of these lawsuits, Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross later said that he originally had an idea to add a citizenship question very short after he was confirmed as the Commerce Secretary early in the Trump administration. He said that there were other senior Trump administration officials who brought up this idea, and that former White House Chief Strategist Steve Bannon connected Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross with Kris Kobach, and Kobach suggested adding a question not about the Voting Rights Act. His concern was about apportionment, a wonky term about how power is distributed around the country, specifically congressional seats. Congressional seats are distributed based on the population counts of each state from the census. And so Kris Kobach was concerned, says that it's a problem that unauthorized immigrants are included in those census numbers for apportionment. And the Voting Rights Act did not appear in these early discussions. There was no mention of a Voting Rights Act. And in fact, these emails show that Commerce Secretary Ross pressured his Commerce Department staff to find a way to get a citizenship question onto the census, and that they approached the Justice Department. And initially, the Justice Department staff said, no, we don't want to ask for this question. And they referred them to the Department of Homeland Security, which also said no, and referred them back to the Justice Department. And so there was some shopping around to get a other federal agency to request a citizenship question. Ultimately, it was requested by the Justice Department.
We have an email from Leanne. She says, I haven't heard anyone say if you don't like the question, then don't answer it. What happens if people skip that question? Are they not counted?
If you were to skip a question on the 2020 census, that doesn't necessarily mean you won't be counted. However, federal law requires every household to answer every question of every person on the census, and you could be fined for not answering a question. You could also risk having a follow-up call or a follow-up visit from a census worker. But skipping a question does not necessarily mean you won't be counted in the census.
And what about just lying on the census?
It is illegal to intentionally provide false answers to any of the census questions, and you could be subject to a fine.
Does the Census Bureau have the time and the resources to do that kind of follow-up on a question like this? Do you know?
Historically, it has been rarely enforced, those fines. There have been cases, very few cases that have been prosecuted, but it'd be very rare that that has happened historically. But if you were to look at the law, it does say it is illegal to skip a question, and it is also illegal to intentionally give a false answer.
Hansi, the decision's expected out in early June, right? That gives the Census Bureau enough time to still print up the census one way or another, right?
Well, this is a very tight timeline.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court runs on its own schedule, so everyone is waiting, and the Census Bureau is hoping that the Supreme Court will issue a ruling by the end of its term that currently is expected to end in June. And July 1st is when the Census Bureau says it has to begin the printing of this 1.5 billion census paper forms, letters, postcards, other pieces of mail that have to go out and have to be printed in time before the census starts officially in January and in rural parts of Alaska. It later rolls out to most households by April next year.
Hansi Lo Wang, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Hansi Lo Wang is NPR national correspondent. He is covering the issue before the Supreme Court to decide whether to allow a citizenship question on the 2020 census. We'll get more in detail coming up on All Sides with Ann Fisher. Stay with us. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
In WOSU Public Media's newest podcast series, Rivet, young people share their unique pathways to professional success. Listen to This American Graduate Project. Find Rivet now in WOSU's mobile app or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The Supreme Court will decide in June whether to allow a citizenship question on the 2020 census. The Trump administration has defended the question, saying that the resulting data will help enforce the Voting Rights Act. But the Census Bureau itself concedes that the question could discourage 6.5 million U.S. residents from filling out the census. Angela Plummer is the executive director for Community Refugees and Immigration Services. She works with the immigrant community, which could be very impacted by the citizenship question. She joins us now. Welcome back.
Thanks, Ann.
Also joining us is Ohio State University law professor Daniel Takagi. He teaches constitutional law. Welcome back.
Thanks, Ann.
The Census Bureau estimates 6.5 million people might not respond to the census if there's a citizenship question. Angie, why would non-citizens not want to respond?
Well, even those who are here lawfully are very suspicious of why this is being added now. And from every objective standard, for the immigrant communities, there have been a clear message from the administration that immigrants aren't welcome. So starting with the executive orders at the beginning of the administration, removing privacy protections for immigrants, trying to remove status for DACA recipients, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, trying to revoke temporary protected status, not allowing people's grandparents to come, you know, to block them from entering the country. So immigrants are very suspicious of the administration and why they would be adding a citizenship question now. And we're really concerned that, you know, people will shut their door and not be interested in filling out the census, you know, until they get the citizenship certificate in their hand. Even if they have a green card now or here lawfully working, they're reluctant to, you know, give any information over to the government that might draw attention to the fact that they aren't citizens yet.
Hmm. And Daniel Takagi, historically, is there cause for concern?
I think historically there is. Let me first say that there is a federal law on the books, first adopted in 1954, that prohibits census information from being used to the detriment of the person responding. That said, there is a history here, and I have some personal history as well as a Japanese American. My father, his parents and his brothers and sisters were all interned, or really, if we want to be more precisely, incarcerated at a relocation camp, quote unquote, at Manzanar in Central California during World War II. And we later discovered that that census information was turned over to the Army, which used that information in rounding up Japanese Americans to be evacuated from the West Coast and sent to these internment camps, effectively concentration camps. So we do have a history here, but I do want to stress to those out there that there was subsequently a federal law enacted which prohibits census information from being used to the detriment of those responding.
But that was pre-9/11, and I'm wondering if other laws could supersede that on the basis of national security.
I wouldn't put any legal arguments, however frivolous, passed the Trump administration. But it strikes me on reading the law that it is quite clear. And I think that if the Trump administration were to try to use census information in a way that was detrimental to anyone, including non-citizens and their families, courts would find that to be a violation of federal law.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the 2020 census and a decision, a controversial decision by Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross to include a question about citizenship in the 2020 census. Now, you may have gotten one of the community survey questionnaires over the past 10 years that does include the citizenship question, but that's only given out to a small group of people, and it's not used to do things like count the size of a congressional district or to decide how to disperse federal funds and that kind of a thing. Angie Plummer, what about that resources issue and how the census is used on that score?
Well, since the actual count is so important for determining how resources are allocated, we really need to know exactly how many people are in a location. So when schools are being built, when roads are being built, when decisions are made by, you know, the private sector, where to build hospitals, there's countless reasons why we need an actual count. And by putting the citizenship question on the form, it's absolutely going to reduce the number of participants. Regardless of whether we can convince folks that there is a law in place, that there are penalties for sharing this information, their behavior is another matter. And, you know, there is a law. And in the same way, I would have thought there's no way in this country that courts would uphold discriminating against people from entering the country based on their national origin. That happened. The Supreme Court upheld the travel ban, something I never thought would be possible. And I think that's sort of the mentality in the immigrant community. Gosh, you just don't know what will happen in this climate. So there's such a, you know, a climate of fear right now that even a rational explanation, you know, so from someone like me to try to convince them, we really need you to participate. We need, you know, we need you to count. I'm also trying to convince myself that that information won't be shared. We saw with the unaccompanied minors the sharing of information between two federal agencies that led to, you know, data shared on potential sponsors so that we couldn't get sponsors for the children because it was shared with ICE. And I think that that fear continues.
Daniel?
Yeah, so what I think is really important to recognize when we talk about the census and the purposes it serves is that there are really two purposes for which the modern census now functions. The first is the one that's set forth in the Constitution, right? The Constitution requires an actual enumeration of everyone, not just citizens, but everyone in the country. There's a second purpose that is served by the modern census as well as the American Community Survey that Hansi was talking about earlier, and that's to get demographic information on the people. Now, it's critical to understand that the central purpose behind this actual enumeration that's required by the United States Constitution is to get an accurate count of everybody in the country. And the reason for that under the Constitution is because that actual enumeration has to be used to allocate representatives in Congress, right? That's how it's decided how many U.S. representatives each state will have. That information also gets used for the drawing of legislative districts. And I think a lot of us suspect that the real reason for adding this citizenship question is precisely to diminish the count, to get an undercount of certain populations, including not only non-citizens but Latinos more generally, which will in turn skew representation away from cities and states with large numbers of non-citizens and Latinos,
which tend
and
to
towards
be
places with fewer.
Democratic.
Which in general tend to be. Yeah. So, you know, the aggregate effect of asking the citizenship question, if we want to get right down to brass tacks, is going to skew representation to the benefit of the Republican Party and to the detriment of the Democratic Party.
Opponents argued that a question about citizenship would discourage participation and that that would make the decision unconstitutional because the question hinders the government's ability to carry out the constitutional mandate to count heads once
Correct.
A decade.
Yeah.
Is there any history of other questions being thought to have the same impact and therefore being rejected?
Certainly not on this scale. And let me just add one thing to what you said. You say opponents of the citizenship question argue that this is going to depress the count among it's really uncontested.
Bureau.
It's really
yeah.
it's the Census
agrees.
Bureau itself, which is of right. course, you know, part of one of the defendants in this case, the Department of Commerce. There's just no question that asking the citizenship question will diminish the count and result in an undercount of Latinos and non-citizens in particular, approximately a 5.8% decrease in non-citizens, and it's estimated around an 8% decrease in the Hispanic overall population. So it's just not really in question that we're going to get a lower count, an undercount as a result of this question. And that's the heart of the constitutional problem.
Yeah. And Angie Plummer, I mean, already, even without this question, turnout on the census among non-residents or non-citizens, I should say, already is depressed, right? They don't tend to trust.
Oh, absolutely. Even in the pre-Trump era, there is a reluctance to provide personal information. You know, a lot of folks come from places where there was mistrust of the government.
Authoritarian places.
Yes, yeah. even our little local office trying to collect information that we're supposed to report on to funders, people are reluctant to provide it because they're very protective of it and they're concerned that there'll be something detrimental will happen. So add to that the current state of fear of immigrants, and then there's much, much more likelihood that they be reluctant to participate.
And Daniel Tokaji, what as far as the Voting Rights Act goes, how does this tactic, I mean, I know that there's dispute of whether this is the real reason why the Trump administration wants to include the citizenship question on the census, but how are they describing it would help enforce the Voting Rights Act?
Yeah. I
still can't seem to get a clearer answer.
Right. So the pretext for adding the citizenship question is that we need it to enforce Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. It's very clear, first of all, that that is a pretext, that Wilbur Ross, the Secretary of Commerce, decided that he wanted to add this question and then went out for several months looking for some justification for it, looking in particular for some other federal agency that would ask him to ask the question. And he finally
turned him down, right?
Well, he had no luck for several months, but eventually he found a taker in the Department of Justice, which said basically, we'll give you whatever you want in December of 2017. Now, the rationale here that the Department of Justice and Department of Commerce has put forward, as is often the case, has a grain of truth, which is that citizenship information is sometimes used in voting rights litigation. It can be helpful in ascertaining the number of people who are actually eligible to vote, which is one of the factors that is considered in determining whether there's been impermissible, what we call vote dilution, meaning that a particular minority group's vote has been diluted by, say, the way that legislative districts are drawn. So yeah, citizenship information, here's the grain of truth, is sometimes used in voting rights litigation. What reveals this to be a pretext, however, is the fact that existing sources of information, including the American Community Survey, which goes to about one in six households, is perfectly adequate and has been routinely used in voting rights litigation to ascertain how many citizens are in a particular area. Moreover, it's very clear, as three of the district courts have essentially found, that asking the citizenship question will actually give you a less reliable count of who's living where. So it just doesn't hold up to careful scrutiny. And if that doesn't convince you, ask yourself this question. Do you really believe that not just Wilbur Ross, but also Steve Bannon and Kris Kobach, the Secretary of State, former Secretary of State of Kansas, who's made his career on suppressing votes and targeting immigrant populations, that their real interest here was protecting the voting rights of Latinos? I mean, that just doesn't pass the straight face test.
Let's see. Matt in Reynoldsburg, you're on the air. Hi, Matt.
Yes, as the gentleman mentioned, the fact that Kris Kobach and Steve Bannon are on board with this tells us straight off the bat that there's no interest in supporting the Voting Rights Act whatsoever. In fact, they've never seen the Voting Rights Act as anything other than an impediment to Republican control in state houses, legislatures, and Congress. And It is a pretext straight off the bat, and it also has the effect of it's people who aren't going to answer the questions. It's going to create an undercount situation that will further dilute those vote districts in states that are dependent on Latino and immigrant voters who are citizens. And I'll listen off the air.
Okay, Matt. How would that you nodded when Matt said that. If you are a citizen, would it affect turnout or responses on the census for people who are citizens? Angie?
Well, I would say yes. Even in my very unscientific study in my office yesterday with immigrants who have naturalized and become citizens, they said absolutely that. There will be households where there are foreign-born persons who have naturalized who would be reluctant to take the survey. And they may also have mixed status in the household where there are some members who are citizens, some members aren't, and they're concerned about, you know, revealing anything related to citizenship status.
Does the question ask if there's anybody in the household who's not a citizen or?
Yes, the question would ask not only about the person responding, but others in the household and whether they are citizens. Yeah. So there's a real risk, certainly any household that has any member who's not a citizen, that household will not respond. But others, too, particularly in the climate of fear that the president and some of his advisors or former advisors like Steve Bannon have helped create.
So, Angie Plummer, before I let you go, are you sort of between a rock and a hard place? I mean, you understand the concerns and fears, but you still have to encourage people to...
I think that's a great description, between a rock and a hard place. You know, I'm on the mayor and Councilmember Boyce's Commission on Complete Count, and I recognize the importance of making sure everyone is counted, but I also feel an obligation to the people that I work with not to put them in any kind of jeopardy. So, you know, needing to find that place where I'm comfortable, you know, advocating for folks to participate and believing that it won't bring them some kind of a consequence. So it really is tough. I mean, we really do need everyone to participate, but I'm the last person that wants to, you know, put someone out there and have them participate in the survey and have ICE show up at their door.
Listeners, if you're concerned about the question, if you're a non-citizen or if you are a naturalized citizen concerned about revealing that about anyone in your household, you have doubts about filling out the census, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org and tell us what your concerns are. You're listening. I have to say thanks and goodbye to Angie Plummer, Executive Director of the Community Refugee and Immigration Services. Thanks so much, as always, for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
We will continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The Supreme Court heard oral arguments yesterday on the addition of a citizenship question to the 2020 census. The court appears split among ideological lines, with the conservative majority untroubled by the question. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross has said that the citizenship question would help enforce the Voting Rights Act. Opponents say that the question will discourage millions from participating in the count. Still with us is OSU Law Professor Dan Tokaji, who teaches constitutional law. Ilya Shapiro is the director of the Robert A. Levy School for Constitutional Studies at the Cato Institute. It's a libertarian think tank in Washington. He supports the inclusion of the citizenship question. Ilya Shapiro joins us by phone. Welcome to the show.
Good to be on.
Why do you support having the question in the census?
Oh, I don't know if I support it or not. I don't really have a firm view one way or another, I think. I do think on the law, the secretary, the administration probably has the better of it, just because the standard for adding questions is pretty low bar, and they've articulated that they want the, as it's been in the past, they want to put it back on. And I think they've basically met their burden for, you know, experts might disagree, but this is a good enough for government work, as it were.
That is a pretty low bar.
Yeah. Isn't the census more important than that?
Well, the census is, what's important is just counting people. Beyond that, you know, how many bathrooms you have in your house, and how many people you know, what their ages of people are, and all these different things that people ask. That the census has asked over the years, all of that is really optional. And I think this question can be useful. It's useful to know, you know, where citizens are, where non-citizens are. It's not necessarily about, you know, the deporting people or whatever. It's just figuring out you know, different funding programs to go towards green card holders versus citizens versus other kinds of residents. And, you know, it's not a crazy thing. And like I said, the bar is pretty low for deferring to the administration and setting census questions.
It's interesting, but if it discourages 6.5 million people from responding to the census, isn't it, you know, I guess it's a balancing of priorities. I mean, what's more important?
Well, I mean, again, the experts disagree and about exactly why, you know, people with or families with illegal aliens and them might not respond as well. They also tend to be poor. They tend to be less educated, which are also correlated with non-response to the census. And there's a battle of experts exactly about how many people would be discouraged and what the modeling shows otherwise. But again, this battle of experts is not something that courts should be necessarily ruling on. Again, there's when we're setting census questions, it's a pretty deferential standard under the law.
Hmm. So let me add a couple of things. There are really two main claims in the case that's before the Supreme Court. This comes from a decision out of a federal court in the state of New York, which held that the question violates the Administrative Procedures Act, which is a complicated federal law. But the basic requirement is that agency action can't be arbitrary and capricious. There's a second claim which arises under the so-called enumeration clause or census clause of the U.S. Constitution, the clause I mentioned earlier, which requires an actual enumeration. And, you know, I think there's a good chance we're going to see an ideological divide on the court on this as on so many other questions. It's pretty clear from the record, and in fact, all three of the lower courts to have looked at it have basically found that the Department of Commerce was acting pretextually in adding this question, and that we're likely to get a less accurate count, roughly a 6% undercount among non-citizens. The real big question is how much those facts will matter to the court, and I'm pretty confident we're going to see different answers from different members of the court on that question. Some of them saying, yes, that makes it arbitrary and capricious and unreasonable under the Constitution. Others saying it doesn't matter.
Ilya Shapiro, getting back to the question about this could be useful information, point taken, but it does – that question is included on the long-form surveys that are sent out periodically throughout the decade to samples of the population. Why is that not enough?
Well, apparently there are issues with the – it's the American Community Survey,
right,
that's sent periodically. And it's funny, the challengers to the inclusion of this question – in previous litigation over voting rights and other things, said that information was not well collected. So there's kind of a switching in posture depending on where you stand on different types of political issues. But the overall legal question, I think I do agree with Professor Fakai's analysis. That's what it's going to turn on. And with John Roberts, the Chief Justice, in the middle of the court, jurisprudentially, I think what he seemed to indicate was he doesn't want to rock waves in general. He doesn't want to take positions that look political. So he's not going to say, yeah, I support the administration. I support the inclusion of the question is correct and should be included. He's going to say, we could rule either way. I don't know. I have my own judgment. My colleagues have theirs. But we're just going to defer to the process here, and they've correctly lawyered all of this up, and we're not going to look behind the four corners of that. It's going to be, I think, somewhat similar to what he wrote in the travel ban case.
Heather in Delaware, you're on the air. Hi, Heather.
Hi. I just want to say I'm a citizen, but I will in no way answer that question. I don't want to do one thing to support Trump's people. And your guest who referred to people as illegal aliens, right there you show your bias. They're people. They're not Martians. They're not aliens. They're people. Thank you.
Thanks, Heather. I mean, is that a concern that other people will not fill it out either, not just people who feel like they could be harmed
from it? Oh, I'm sure. I mean, I work for a libertarian institution. I'm an immigrant myself, by the way, and illegal alien is simply the term of law. It's awkward, but that's what it is. It's not that the people are illegal, it's their immigration status is. But anyway, lots of people refuse to turn it back for, why is the government forcing me to do this or that? And technically, I think that's a strong point. You really shouldn't be punished or any aspersions taken for not doing anything other than counting people, which is what is constitutionally authorized.
Let me just close with one point, and this case is a really big deal, and this issue, even though it might seem obscure to some listeners, it matters a lot because the information about the population and where they are affects the flow of federal dollars for all sorts of things and will for the next decade, not just next year, next 4 years, the next decade. It's also going to affect how members of Congress are distributed among the states. And even more so, it's going to affect how districts are drawn within the states. We've talked about that a little bit already. If you get an undercount of the total population, as you surely will if this question is left on, that's going to skew representation among different parts of the country and among different parts of every state, including our own. It also is likely to set the stage for another legal battle over how state legislative districts get drawn and whether a state is free to count only citizens or whether the states have to include everyone, the total population, in dividing the state up among districts. And I think that's going to be, after this Supreme Court decision, especially if it comes out in favor of the Department of Commerce, the next big legal battle. And that would result in a huge shift in representation in general to the benefit of Republicans and against Democrats if only citizens are counted when dividing up people among districts.
Does that and by the way, I have to say thank you and goodbye to Daniel Takagi, Ohio State University.
Thanks so much, Ann.
Constitutional law professor. Thanks so much. Ilya Shapiro, is that a concern of yours at all?
Well, that future battle, I do have a firmer view on. As I said, I don't really care that much one way or another on the question, but in terms of how you district, who you take into account, I think citizens of voting age, CVAP, as they call it, is the political community that should be considered when you're drawing up these things. People that are, whether it's tourists or students or temporary workers, as I have been in all of these categories in the United States over the years, nor people who are here illegally. Those are not members of the political community. And so when you're drawing up these representational districts and whatnot, I do think that citizens of voting age is the metric. But that's a separate discussion, because the census is just about, counting people and seeing who's where
And what we want to do is make sure that that count is accurate.
Well, I apologize if I misunderstood, but when you represent a district in Congress, you're representing everybody in the district, not just the people who vote.
Well, yes and no. So in the sense that, do you count children, for example, balancing representation? Is it a problem if two districts with the same number of people, but one has twice as many voters as the other, and therefore constituent, therefore the politics is different? Do you try to equalize both? These are complicated issues that are introduce issues of rural versus urban, different parts of the country. Mormon families, for example, have big families. Other religious groups have smaller or secular groups. So it's a complicated issue that goes beyond the scope of this case, certainly.
Well, it's not a question that a representative represents everybody in a district, not just the people who vote, is it?
Well, yes. But when you're divvying up, they represent them. But who do you count when you're figuring out how to draw these districts? Is it everybody in the districts, or is it citizens of voting age? Is it all citizens, whether they can vote or not, that's a broader discussion about how you draw those representational districts. But yeah, I mean, they represent. I mean, their constituents are whoever is there. Although children, yes, in a sense. What about people who are only there temporarily, tourists or students? Probably not. There's debates about how you functionally define that line. It's kind of a point of political philosophy.
As far as the issue of whether or not this data could be used against people, we talked earlier about the 1954 federal law that prohibits it. I guess that's a reflection of the misuse of the data when the internment camps were established during World War II. But are you concerned about that?
No, I mean, I don't think that wall has ever been breached. These agencies don't really talk to each other. I mean, it's a much bigger concern about the information that's been gathered through DACA and DAPA, for example, that has let people be exposed that when these policies change, that the Homeland Security can use them for enforcement purposes. I'm not so much concerned. I mean, I understand why people filling out the forms might be concerned because you're giving certain information to the government, but both practically and legally, that has not been a concern to date.
Not to date, but it could be if this question's included.
Well, that would be an illegal use, and that would open up a much larger process of lawsuits. I can't really see that happening. And by the way, I should say, asking this question, this is the only country where asking this question is controversial, just like this is the only question where voter identification is controversial. I mean, most of the Western world asks questions about citizenship and checks it before you go to vote.
And so what is the particularly American take on that? What do you make of that?
It's simply changed over the decades. They moved it to the long survey, then they got rid of the long survey, then there's an issue with how the American Community Survey has been put into place. I mean, I'm not a demographer. I'm a constitutional lawyer, so it's mm-hmm. kind of getting to the bounds of what I feel comfortable talking about, but the census people and the demographers and the statisticians and the government are trying to figure out different ways of what information is useful with any question. Pick the most innocuous, non-controversial, nobody object to question. Each marginal question detracts from the response rate of these surveys, so you have to pick and choose what's important and kind of competing goals beyond simply counting the bare number.
Well, and as I said earlier, opponents argue that not just opponents, it's kind of everybody agrees it's going to cost the census grand total about 6.5 million respondents if the question's included, and that would make the argument is that
actually not everybody agrees on that, as we heard from
the census
yesterday. The government talked about how we don't know whether it's just that question or response rates that it's hard to disaggregate reasons why people don't respond.
Well, the Census Bureau says it would.
Well, the Census Bureau is part of the government, so I guess the government is disagreeing with itself. But I mean, that's part of the issue, the battle of the experts.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, then I guess the question then, if it does hinder, there's a mandate to count heads once a decade. If something hinders that mandate, that's not troublesome.
Well, like I said, everything hinders that mandate. That is, each additional question, there's a balance of interest. You know, mm-hmm. if it was just about counting people, period, then it would be a one sentence questionnaire: how many people are in your household, and that's it. But we've never had simply that.
Ilya Shapiro, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Take care.
Ilya Shapiro is director of the Robert A. Levy Center for Constitutional Studies at the Cato Institute in Washington. That's it today for All Sides. Thank you so much for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.